Welcome to the EFT Zone Spotlight. Today we're highlighting Dawson Church. Dawson is from Northern California. He's an author, publisher, researcher, and a whole lot more. Listen in as we shine the spotlight on Dawson Church.
I have been writing about holistic health for about 2.5 decades. I became intrigued by vibrational healing, by the whole idea that by shifting the energy of an encounter and by shifting the personal energy, that a change could occur in a person's body. And even though the scientific evidence for those kinds of shifts was very sparse, this is in the early 80s, I actually had experiences like I literally saw wounds heal up in a few seconds, like somebody's wound literally close up and heal in a period of a few moments that would normally have taken days or weeks. So I saw these experiences, but there was very little thought back then about rigorously testing them. And it wasn't until Dan Benor, a wonderful psychiatrist friend, first began to collect all of the studies on spiritual healing into his volumes of healing research that people like me and Larry Dossey and Bernie Siegel and other people in the health field began to realize there's actually quite a lot of scientific evidence for the efficacy of these therapies. Once you accumulate that evidence into one place, it forms a pretty impressive body of research. Gradually, we moved from observing these effects clinically, seeing this happen to people, to noticing that there was quite a bit of research out there. And now finally, with energy psychology, we're actually doing research with the goal of seeing what's happening and identifying the exact mechanisms that are at work here and also which conditions are affected by this. There are some conditions, for example, which EFT I found does not affect. And I had one experience recently with a group of people suffering from tinnitus, which is ringing in the ear. I worked on, I think, 4 or 5 people at the same time at a conference and got nowhere with the tinnitus. They all had a complete reversal of their emotional issues, but they had no reduction in their tinnitus issue. And I talked to Gary Craig afterwards, and he said, I found that EFT doesn't work with tinnitus. So it looks like there are certain things that we can, first of all, identify clinically that work or don't work, and then later on we can do research and find out exactly how big the effect is and what seems to be going on here. So it's been an odyssey for me, first of all, personal interest, making personal discoveries, reading research, and now finally doing research to see exactly what's at work with EFT and other therapies like this. I'm the director of research at ASAP, and as such, I have really tried to both kickstart new research, but also to rationalize the research that is already being done or that is planned. And by rationalize, what I mean is the energy psychology community have made mistakes in research up to this point. For example, we had a marvelous study of EFT and phobias, people who were phobic, who had phobias of small animals, rats, mice, snakes, bats, spiders, and so on. And the study was very well done, published in a mainstream journal, the American Psychological Association journal, and then there was also a replication of that study. But one person's name in the list of researchers was the same on those two studies, and as a rule at the American Psychological Association, that if you're doing a replication, the second study has to be done by a completely different team that does not share even one member. So because we didn't know that rule or follow that rule, we missed a chance several years ago to have EFT accepted as an efficacious therapy for phobias by the American Psychological Association. So I looked at missteps like that in the field in the past, and I now make sure that, for example, if we're doing two studies, that we don't mix researchers. I'm making sure that we pick certain conditions, because before people were studying agoraphobia, and they were studying anxiety, and they were studying different targets. Now I've said we need to pick just a few conditions. We need to do two or more studies to establish efficacy, and we need to focus our research by using the same kinds of measurement techniques in all the studies. So we now use the same techniques, the same ways of evaluation. We are studying only a few targeted areas that we're studying: PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, we're studying pain, physical pain, we're studying anxiety, and we're studying depression. And those are the four things we're focused on. So even though there are tons of different conditions we could study, we're trying to establish energy psychology and EFT with a common set of criteria, research criteria, for those four conditions. And so as the research director at ASEP, I'm helping make sure that that happens, along with a marvelous research committee. We have about 80 people on our research committee, and they contribute collectively close to $100,000 worth of unpaid volunteer time each year to get research done. So we have about 12 studies ongoing right now through the research committee, and I also direct and actually do some of the studies myself, hopefully less as time goes on, because it's unpaid work for me, and I'm spending tons of time on it now. It's just consuming other things I should be doing that are financially productive for me. I very much expect that in the next couple of years we'll see research into EFT picked up, not just by these small bands of pioneering volunteer researchers, but that we will see picked up by major research institutions like UCSF, like Duke University, like Harvard, like University of Arizona, Tucson. I think we'll see a huge flowering into EFT in the course of the coming few years. This has been one of the big paradoxes about this work, is that one of the reasons it's been hard to get research going into EFT is that I would talk to people about doing research, and they would say, well, you just tried it, it's obvious. Well, it's obvious to you because you've tried it, but to the skeptical psychiatrist or physiologist, until they see a scientific paper showing that it works, they have no clear idea that it's efficacious. And so its very efficacy actually has hindered it being adopted for research. One of the criticisms, I don't know if you're aware of the situation with the American Psychological Association, but the APA has done quite a number of things in the last decade to actually bar or ban energy psychology from the practice of psychology. One of their criticisms is there's so little research. You know, these therapies have been around, thought field therapy for 30, 35 years. Where is the research? And they're totally right. They're totally justified in that criticism of us, of this community of therapies, because we have not had much research. One of the reasons we haven't had much research is people try it. It's so blindingly obviously efficacious that people then say, well, I didn't even bother about research. So a big challenge for me has actually been getting research galvanized, and I'm happy now we have these 12 studies underway right now, some of which are starting to be published in the next few months. Also, we need funds for research desperately and urgently. We have several promising research things that are underway or that could be taken to the next step if we had money. And so one of I'm doing a fundraiser actually next month to try and raise funds for research. This incredibly urgent need, once we do just a few more studies, we'll then meet the American Psychological Association internal criteria for efficacy for pain, for anxiety, for depression, and for post-traumatic stress disorder. And once we are certified as efficacious for those fields, to psychologists for those conditions, suddenly the whole game will change. And then very quickly, I think that EFT will become actually not just a therapy that they can use, but there's a chance it could become what's called the standard of care, quote unquote, where literally it's regarded as the best therapy available and it becomes required to practice it. So once there's enough research, we'll go from being in this wilderness where the APA has barred us from teaching energy psychology to the professions. We will go from that wilderness, we'll go very quickly, I believe, to mainstream, not just acceptance, but actually being required for certain conditions that therapists deliver energy psychology to patients. And And there are very promising therapies that go nowhere, promising technologies that go nowhere as well. And it's interesting to look at those that do and those that don't. I think that looking at what the hurdles are that EFT has to surmount to go mainstream, and then intelligently actually dismantling those hurdles or jumping them, that's been my approach. Like, I've heard many EFT practitioners and therapists complain about the medical professional. You know, why don't hospitals adopt this? Why don't, you know, it's so good, why aren't therapists using it? Why isn't it being used in emergency situations? Well, the reason it hasn't been used is because if you're a doctor or if you're a psychiatrist, you cannot experiment on your patients. You have to use therapies and forms of care that have a scientific basis to them, that have been shown by studies to be useful and not harmful. And so rather than griping about that standard, I'm saying, great, let's embrace that standard. Let's do the research. Let's do the work to show that our therapy does meet those standards, because then we take these standards that are already in place in the medical profession and we use them to our advantage. One of my favorite sayings about research is that to show that your greyhound is fastest, you don't have to beat every other greyhound. You only have to beat the fastest greyhound. Now, right now in therapy, the fastest greyhound is called cognitive behavioral therapy, or CBT. That's the standard of care. For example, at Kaiser Permanente, which is a 9 million member HMO health chain, and a very fast-growing one, and a relatively well-run one, cognitive behavioral therapy is the standard of care. So if we show that EFT is better than cognitive behavioral therapy at addressing these conditions I mentioned earlier, like anxiety and depression, then we can take that to the Kaisers of the world and say, look, here's proof that our greyhound is faster than the current fastest greyhound. So looking at what the obstacles are to widespread adoption and then tackling those is really my focus. And I don't want to sound elitist here or exclusionary, but I love the many individual practitioners at EFT. I love all the coaches doing EFT. But my focus is not on getting more coaches and individual therapists to do EFT. My focus is on getting EFT into big institutional settings, because suddenly there, I'm not just going to help a coach realize they can treat 40 people a year. I'm going to help a hospital chain realize that they can treat 400,000 people a year. So that's the big game. The little game is applying it individually to people. The big game is to have it meet the criteria that a good therapy has to meet to be practiced in hospitals. And that's the whole focus of what I do. I'm preparing a project to see if we can get a government grant to study EFT's effects when done in groups with veterans coming back from Iraq with, you know, 100, 200 veterans at a time. Now, we know that if you do EFT in a group, that it does make a difference to people psychologically, because we have other studies to show that. A year ago, I began to do a study with Iraq veterans, and I now have data. I now have results from that. Gary Craig did an intensive with some Vietnam veterans, and I did a research project to measure their psychological well-being before and after. So now I can go to the Veterans Administration, not with good stories about veterans and healing and EFT, but hard data. I can tell them their post-traumatic stress syndrome dropped by 63% after an EFT intensive. Their depression dropped by 35%. Their anxiety dropped by 28%. To within the range of normal scores in all of these conditions. Their hostility dropped, all these things. And, you know, if your hostility drops, they're studies showing that Vietnam veterans have lower risk of heart attacks. So we know that they'll be healthier if all of these psychological markers go down. We need to do the things that it takes to jump those hurdles to be in the mainstream. And I see us doing that. There's no opposition to doing this. There's a real recognition. We need to do this. Now, there's no money. My time is very, very stretched. I'm a volunteer. There are other volunteers doing it. And it's amazing we get the results we do. I said to one colleague, I said, we're taking a thimble of sand and making it look as though we have a beach. So we're taking these very, very tiny resources we've got and trying to do this enormous task of literally changing the healthcare system and driving into mainstream healthcare. I think, though, that we will succeed. I see us actually doing that. I believe it will be adopted by certainly some of the big HMOs. In fact, I will predict that by this time next year, by middle of 2009, we will see EFT in one or two big healthcare chains being taught routinely to thousands of people for particular conditions. I think we're actually in the middle of that kind of large-scale penetration in a way in which NLP didn't quite do. Now, EMDR has done that. In fact, we've looked at EMDR and the way EMDR did succeed in doing this and used that as a model for EFT and how we can do that with EFT and in much shorter amounts of time as well. So I think a therapy this good and a therapy with this much evidence behind it, just a matter of very short period of time before it makes widespread penetration into mainstream healthcare, both in psychology and in medicine.